go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! The 26th day of December 2014. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go if on the day after Christmas, when not just a heck of a lot of people are out there broadcasting, you want to hear some live radio. It's here. It's right now. We're live. Yes, I admit, I'd said that we weren't going to be live, but well, Ferg wanted to go out for his birthday stuff earlier in the day instead of later in the day. And so we got back almost in time to be right on time for the program. And he said, "Ed, go do a program." He said, "Dad, probably hadn't been a lot out there live today. Go be live, Dad." So we are. So bear with me for just a minute while I send the word out. Won't take but a sec. Let's see. Here we go. Just a sec. The tweet is out. That will hit my Facebook page. Let's see. Let's do one more thing. Just to get as many folks rounded up as we possibly can. One more thing. Yeah, there. No, not a live. Just a second. It may seem a little bit egotistical, but I consider it my gift back to the Horn community. And an opportunity to sort of sit around, cuss and discuss, carry on, whatever. Yeah, so everybody knows the Listen Live button is at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Access to the chat room is at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Maybe when word gets around. No, this is not the rerun stream, Sparky. This is live. Maybe when word gets around, we'll get folks joining in. At least I hope so. So, where are we this evening? Well, I'll go ahead and update. We had a lovely day yesterday. We went over to be with family. In fact, we did spend the day with family. Cooked like crazy. Always forget something. I forgot. Yeah, it's tradition in our family. If you don't forget some critical ingredient by Christmas Day, it may be, I don't know. I've never not forgotten something. Yesterday, it was pickles. I forgot pickles for the deviled eggs, so there were no deviled eggs. But there was a beautiful, succulent, tender, smoky turkey done by young Chef Ferg. The pregnant turkey joke didn't work out quite so well. The doodle didn't fall for it. Dang it. You'll have that. I made dressing, mashed potatoes, oysters bienville, fried oysters, and we all just kind of munched and snacked along the way all day long, and it was just a wonderful, joyful occasion. So it was a beautiful day. I think just a clear blue sky day. By the time we got home last night, there were just a million billion trillion stars in the sky. And Ferg got up this morning, and you know we were all very birthday, and he is a happy birthday boy. Last night, as it just worked out nicely. Last night, as we were driving home, and I didn't do it deliberately, but I looked up and I realized, and I looked at him and said, you know, exactly 19 days and 3 hours ago, your mother and I were driving down this same road, only it wasn't balmy and warm and pleasant outside, and it was freezing cold, and there was 2 feet of snow on the road, and I was driving down this highway, headed to Charleston, West Virginia, in four-wheel drive low at about 10 miles an hour. And that sort of touched him, and that's why I posted today his newborn photo and a photo of him yesterday with his sister, Doodle. You can check it out on my Facebook page if you wish. You know me. I can't help doing what I do, even on days when I don't anticipate being behind the microphone. I'm still looking at the news. I'm still reading stories. Can't be helped. I don't know, maybe a Thorazine dart in the neck would help, but not much beyond that. And the punchline of the old joke occurred to me. You know, the punchline that says, okay, coffee breaks over. Back on your heads. Yeah. That punchline. Yeah, the two greatest punchlines in the world are coffee breaks over, back on your head, and wrecked him, damn near killed him. Well, this, in reading the news, I realized we were smack dab in the middle of a coffee breaks over, back on your heads kind of moment. And we are we have a million different choices we can make for coffee breaks over, back on your head. Yeesh. And none of them, of course, are, well, you know, it's just how it goes. No, there's all kinds of the all I can say is the right wingers apparently do not take the day off for Christmas. They spend all of their time talking about Jesus is the reason for the season, and then keep behaving like the Philistines that they are. By the way, I want to send out special thanks to everybody who helped us out during the week and has kept us even as we go, as we move into the last week of the year. It'll be vital that we end on a good note. And there's an opportunity this evening, of course, to get a little bit ahead. You know where the PayPal interface is, right? No set goals or anything this evening because this is just a I kind of have to be dragged kicking and screaming away from the microphone. Let's put it that way. I don't do this. Well, just that's as it is. But hey, thank you, Sparky. Sparky's helped getting the word out. And this is Friday on the front porch. So there's every possibility in the world that we might have ourselves a Jim Dandy little Friday on the front porch conversation. Just kind of depends on how things shake out in a little bit, whether or not Sparky wants to fire things up. It's all just sort of up in the air, impromptu al fresco. But hey. Let's go back to some, like I said, they right-wingers behaving badly. Plenty of opportunities. Here's a heartwarming Christmas tale. Naturally, it comes out of Floridistan. And it has to do, it's a story out of the Broward Palm Beach New Times. Jesus, this is hard. Christmas Eve, apartment complex, Delray Beach, Florida. And Palm Beach Sheriff's Office deputy kills son. Shatara K. Shatara killed Thomas Shatara on Christmas Eve. Because the Tree of Liberty must be watered from time to time with the blood of community college students. It is its natural manure. So that's one cop story. Here's another one. This one out of Illinois. Holy cow. Officer Brian Barker is a 19-year veteran of the Edwardsville, Illinois Police Department. He just got busted for burglary. Not only did he get busted for burglary, he got busted for burglary, which he perpetrated while in uniform and on duty. Yeah, they, the people of Edwardsville, Illinois, in order to form a more perfect union, maintain a police department. And a member of that police department is Brian Barker, who was, according to news reports, in uniform, drawing his pay from the people of Edwardsville, Illinois, when he bumped off he broke and entered. He burglarized Reality Salon and Spa. No kidding. Got into their cash register, robbed the joint. Meanwhile, it turns out that Edwardsville, Illinois, has been experiencing a bit of a crime spree of late. And it turns out that Officer Barker stands charged with stealing money and weapons from at least one private residence. He's also suspected of having knocked over Afsana's alterations, edible arrangements, Edison's entertainment, extreme vapor, Headstrong Hair, The Little Gym, and Pedagos. Sounds like he's working his way through the alphabet, doesn't it? Here's a fun quote. the Belleville, Illinois News Democrat interviewed Madison County, Illinois State's Attorney Tom Gibbons. And Tom Gibbons said, "We put all this trust, faith, and power in police officers, but with that comes gigantic stresses." Really? Mounting the defense, are we already, State's Attorney Tom Gibbons? "When they breach that trust, it's so much worse. The magnitude of this breach of public trust necessitates a very harsh penalty, and we will be seeking prison time." See, the reason I kind of brought this issue up is here we have State's Attorney, District Attorney, Prosecutor, who, upon being informed of a police officer engaging in, anybody? Property crimes, has immediately run to the microphones to declare, "This is a breach of the public trust, and we will not tolerate it," over stealing stuff. Just check me, but I don't have any handy quotes from state's attorneys saying, "You know, it's a terrible breach of the public trust when an unarmed human being is gunned down in the street by a police officer. We will be seeking prison time." You see, among other things, I think I mentioned it the other night. Well, I know News Ninja Carol Baker mentioned it the other night. There's been another killing near Ferguson by police. And a grand jury has just returned a no true bill in the case of a police officer in the Houston area who shot down an unarmed man of color. Yeah. State's Attorney Tom Gibbons up in Illinois continued and said, "It's really sad to see someone who's supposed to be the good guy go wrong, but the measure of character of leadership is what they do when it happens. In this case, the Edwardsville Police Department absolutely did the right thing." 10 counts of burglary for 19-year veteran officer Brian Barker, 10 counts of burglary, 1 count of residential burglary, and 1 count of aggravated possession of stolen firearms. How many times do you suppose that probably happens around the country in any given year? I'm not at all certain. But I bet you it happens more than this once. Probably by a long shot. Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, there's New York State. They have state troopers in New York State. One might have considered, perhaps, that some of those state troopers could have been used to hunt down the man who shot a couple of police officers last week in Bedford-Stuyvesant of Brooklyn. But, you know, didn't. I do have some answers on that, though. We asked a lot of questions during the course of the program where we discussed the killing of the two police officers in New York. And our buddy Tosh has chimed in with a little bit of information, asking, would the New York City police shooter have used the megabus from Baltimore to New York City? Explaining, for about the last 5 or 10 years, there have been express buses that run the Northeast Corridor Express from the Baltimore and D.C. areas. Right now, for $35, I could catch a bus from the White Marsh MTA to 8th Avenue in New York City for $35. Since Owings Mills, Maryland, also has MTA stations, the PERP could easily have popped on the light rail from Owings Mill to White Marsh, then jumped on the bus for $35 cash. It's a fancy gypsy operation, no fixed bases. And yet, somehow or another, they knew he was on the bus, and they knew, and apparently the phone was pinging from the bus, but apparently with all the highfalutin national security state gimcracks that we have, it was impossible to set up a roadblock. Go figure. Yeah. Jesus. But anyway, so New York State Trooper Rosenblatt pulled over a motorist by the name of John Huftailing, who is already rolling video. Let's check out the audio.
My name is John Huftailing, and I don't know why I'm being pulled over. This cop saw me and decided to pull me over for I don't know what reason. How's it going?
Put the phone down.
Put the phone down?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I said
the same. Am I not allowed to record, officer? Am I not allowed to record, officer?
Open your window.
I can hear you just fine.
Open your window.
I can hear you just fine, officer. Can I have your badge number, please?
Open your window.
Can I have your badge number, please? Am I being detained?
I'm stopping you for a traffic violation. Open your window, give me your license and registration.
I will give you my license and registration. Let's throw the cigarette out here.
That was a bad move. That was littering.
You're the same one that thought it was a good idea to come to my station and videotape us for some reason?
What?
Am I legally obligated to answer that question?
Mr. State Trooper just screwed up real bad. Are you the same one that thought it was a good idea to come in and videotape us in our station for no reason? Huh? Let's go back.
You the same one that thought it was a good idea to come in my station and videotape us for some reason?
Am I legally obligated to answer that question?
How about if I see you post this on YouTube, I'll find a way for the DA's office to arrest you.
Is it illegal to record police officers?
Oh, wait, let's get that again. That was precious.
Good idea to come to my station and videotape us for some reason?
Am I legally obligated to answer that question?
How about if I see you post this on YouTube, I'll find a way for the DA's office to arrest you.
Is it illegal to record police officers?
When I tell you to put the phone down and you disregard what I'm telling you, yes, it is.
So am I being detained for recording?
Put the phone down.
Is it illegal to record officers?
Give me your license registration.
Okay.
Wow.
Insurance or no? Yes.
Present your papers.
Here you go.
What is the deal with you?
May I ask why I'm being stopped, officer?
Yes, because your exhaust is extremely loud in this car. That's why you're being stopped. You don't have an answer to that one? That's a legitimate VNT violation that I'm stopping you for.
Okay.
What is your answer to that? Can you get the phone out of my face? I'm trying to talk to you, not the phone.
Is it illegal to record?
Put the phone out of my face while I'm trying to talk to you.
I can hear you and I'm talking to you, officer.
Yeah, and I'm trying to make eye contact when you keep putting it in front of you.
I'm looking at you.
So you still don't answer my question.
What is your question, officer?
I'm answering all your questions.
What is your question, officer?
You asked me why I stopped you. I said because you're exhaust.
Actually, he didn't answer all of his questions because he has repeatedly asked him, is it illegal for me to record police? And by the way, the guy we're talking about here, He doesn't have like some little brush cut haircut. This trooper has a complete slick skulled skinhead appearance. And now it's a loud muffler. Now this is a little bit of a lesson. If you're going to do this sort of thing, don't give them anything to stop you over. Obviously, this guy, this trooper Rosenblatt, had apparently an ulterior motive. That's why he asked him about, "Are you the guy that's recording us at the station?" Yeah.
That I'm stopping you for.
Okay.
What is your answer to that? Can you get the phone out of my face? I'm trying to talk to you, not the phone.
Is it illegal to record?
Put the phone out of my face while I'm trying to talk to you.
I can hear you and I'm talking to you, officer.
Yeah, and I'm trying to make eye contact when you keep putting it in front of you.
I'm looking at you.
So you still don't answer my question.
What is your question, officer?
I've been answering all your questions.
What is your question, officer?
This is kind of devolving into a rather childish incident, isn't it? I answered all your questions. You going to answer my questions?
You asked me why I stopped you. I said because you're exhausted. And then you stopped saying anything.
What do you expect me to say?
I gave you the answer.
Okay.
And I asked you a question before of what is your issue of always videotaping?
Am I legally obligated to answer that?
You're obligated because I asked you to. That's why.
Am I being detained?
I'll be back with you in a minute.
Okay.
And that's where it ends. You'll be back with you in a minute. Fascinating. But in particular fascinating because of the statement that he makes. And see, the little First Amendment consideration here. Obviously, this video has made it into the public domain. I've seen it. Lots of people have apparently seen it. But early on in the exchange, how about if I see you post this on YouTube, I'll find a way for the DA's office to arrest you. Huh? What about that? That is called oppression. That's called suppression of free expression. I don't know what kind of training the New York State Trooper Officer Rosenblatt has had, but apparently he went out for coffee, I don't know, maybe a donut when they were having the First Amendment lecture. I'll find a way for the DA to arrest you. Now, we do get one brief glance at the person who was taking this video. Hint. And I think we probably already know why. I mean, we know why this guy was not dragged out of the, to the best of our knowledge, was not dragged out of the car and arrested. He's white. There have been similar incidents around this country where people of color have tried to do the same thing and have had dramatically different results. If you want to see the video, it is over at rawstory.com. New York State Trooper threatens driver recording stop. I'll find a way for the DA's office to arrest you. Tom Bagioni. with the story, Dateline, today. Yeah. At one point in time, he puts his hand up trying to block his face. But, you know, we see his face. And it does, who knows what the New York State standards are on loud exhaust. But you can hear in sort of the background of the audio, you can hear the. And we don't know what the outcome was. We don't know what happened after he went back to his cruiser with the license and the registration. But this young man has done his homework. You're legally obligated because I asked you to. Well, there might be a shred of truth to that. Because in the wake of the attacks of September 11th, 2001... the police have been given broad powers. It wasn't too much longer. I think maybe it was 3 years or so after the September 11th attacks when people, when one case went to the court and there was a holding that if police ask you for your ID, you no longer in the United States of America, land of the free and the home of the brave, to not give ID if asked for it. I don't know about you, but I find it a little worrisome. And you know, I'm probably the whitest 51-year-old guy in America. And I don't drive around with a trunk full of moonshine nor a whole bunch of hillbilly heroin, or I don't drive around with anything illegal. I think it's time for me to get a new inspection sticker. But I don't look at the police the same way I used to. Because you just don't know anymore. You don't know when the next one's going to drive you out of drag you out of the car and just, you know, maybe beat you nearly to death. Because it seems to be a dice roll. And I don't really, I don't know if this country, I doubt if this country has the will to correct this. Oh, but hey, speaking of the First Amendment, it's a great evening for freedom. The Charleston Gazette reporting that even here in West Bicol, Virginia, several movie theaters will screen The Interview. Even if it means that Kim Jong-un may turn the Barbersville Octoplex into a heap of smoking rubble. Because freedom! Wolverines! Was that good? Do we need another take? Cut! Yeah. Sony, meanwhile, is laughing all the way to the bank. Right. Uh, question coming in from Tim from L.A. regarding the New York State Trooper. He says, Bob, would you ask the same question and answer the trooper the same way as the guy? No. No. There's not enough story coming out of the... There's not enough detail there. There's not enough who, what, when, where, why in the story to really give us an idea, except what the trooper says, about what the background is. It is perfectly reasonable to ask, why am I being stopped? And it is also perfectly reasonable to ask, am I being detained? This young man has received some schooling. And I don't necessarily mean he's been to some institution of higher education. I mean he's been taught how to interact with police based upon what he's trying to accomplish. Yeah, I think Tim just sent us something. I think I remember this taking place. Yeah, here we go. Yeah, we featured this on the program. This is from Talibandiana. The difference being that the questions are being asked by a person of dark hue.
What happened in this case was Lisa was driving down the street. She was pulled over for not wearing a seatbelt, for a seatbelt violation. As the officers were citing her for not wearing a seatbelt, she explained to them that she admitted she wasn't wearing her seatbelt and explained that her mother was in the hospital and was on her deathbed and she was trying to get to the hospital quickly before she passed away so that they could say their last goodbyes. The officers from Hammond Police Department then escalated the incident without any basis and without any cause. They had asked Jamal, they came around to the passenger side of the vehicle, asked Jamal to get out of the car without any explanation, never indicated to him that he was not wearing his seatbelt.
And then they broke his window and tased him. Yeah. John Fox is in the chat room this evening, noting, with regard to the interview, anybody think this has been a massive con and a publicity stunt by Sony? Also, does some pro-Merca propaganda at the same time? That's nice. Not to mention a big distraction from the torture reports. This whole thing just stinks. Yeah, it does. Even at the risk of sounding all Alex Jonesy. Meanwhile, with regard to police responses, Carol points out, hell, I'm a fat old gray-haired lady, and I had 5 loaded service revolvers pointed at my head because a neighbor who doesn't like me called in a fake report that I was casing houses to rob with several wrong coloreds in the van. Yeah. I mean, I think it's time, maybe, that we had an honest-to-goodness, earnest discussion about the meaning of the phrase police state and the meaning of the word fascism. Because to those who are historically familiar with the concept, this is beginning to look more and more and more like that. Like fascism, like a police state, remaining for the moment in New York. Let's also consider Tom Bongiorno's story from Raw Story, coming from the original source, KIRO-TV. It's the story of a woman from New York who was traveling to Alaska from New York. Sixty-eight-year-old Jean Mamakis of Huntington, New York, was dragged down the aisle of an aircraft arrested and thrown in jail for 3 days on a charge of trespassing filed by United Airlines. Oh, let's check in on KIRO's report just to see how they play it out. Because, see, it's not like she snuck on the plane, Ms. Mamakis. The 68-year-old woman is on her way to a ski vacation in Alaska.
New this morning, a New York woman was arrested here in Seattle after she tried to make herself more comfortable on her flight to Alaska. Now she was suing United Airlines after she spent days in jail because she says the flight attendants blew the situation out of proportion.
They did handcuff me. There were three policemen that dragged me out of the plane.
And did they tell you what they were charging you with?
They said trespassing.
68-year-old Jean Mamakos of Huntington held up her jeans, ripped, she says, when they pulled her down the aisle. She never made her ski trip to Alaska. Police here in Seattle, where Mamakos and her ski club were changing planes, were called aboard the United flight to arrest her. One of the passengers recorded the incident. Mamakos was resisting arrest, she says, because she had paid thousands in airfare for the round-trip flight and claims unfriendly flight attendants overreacted when she tried to move to an empty row after the doors closed for takeoff. It was the third leg of a long cross-country trip, and she hoped to sleep.
One of the stewardess says, "Oh, no, you don't," which stopped me in my tracks.
So she moved toward the front of the plane.
So I went forward. And then someone, another stewardess, came along and said, "Give me your credit card."
Mamakos, a registered nurse, was in an empty exit row emergency seat and was told this would be a costly upgrade.
At that point, I decided, no, I'm not paying $109. I'll go back to my seat.
Seated now, resigned to her crowded row, an announcement.
I heard the captain say, "There's a lady that wants to get off the plane on this flight, so we have to wait."
Flight attendants then surrounded her
and said, "You have to get off this plane." And I said, "No, I paid for this seat, and I'm going to stay here."
Mamakos was eventually booked, fingerprinted, mugshot taken, and was sent to the county jail. Her bags and her shocked friends went on to Alaska.
They enjoyed their ski trip, and I had an experience in jail.
Her attorney says Mamakos spent 3 harrowing days in jail because courts weren't open on the weekend. They are suing United for $5 million. Now, United.
And I hope she gets every damn dime of it. Oh, wait. I cut off the United response. This ought to be good. Yeah.
Courts weren't open on the weekend. They are suing United for $5 million. Now, United wouldn't comment on this specific case, but a spokesperson did say federal law requires pre-flight briefing for anyone seated in those emergency rows, adding balance and weight safety regulations prevent onboard seat changes.
Bullshit. I'm 6'1", nearly 6'2". And sometimes you get on one of those Air Keebler jets, and if it's not particularly crowded, you look at the flight attendant and you say, "There's nobody in that row back there. Would that be okay?" And they go, "Oh, sure, no problem." I've even been asked if I would like an exit row seat because there's a little more leg room. And I said, "Why, yes." And they said, "Can you do the exit row stuff?" I said, "Yeah, I think so." But again, it's a dice roll. And it's always a dice roll, no matter the nature of the country you're in. Everything's a dice roll. But the thing is, when you're throwing the dice in a police state, when you're throwing the dice in a country that remains in the grips of an authoritarian frenzy, things get interesting. Real fast. Carol pointing out, "I can't count the number of times I've been allowed to switch seats, even gotten free first class upgrades." So here's what'll happen. The case will never go to trial. Ms. Mamakos is not going to get $5 million. She is never going to tell that really embarrassing story, not for her, but for the airline. She's never going to tell that to a jury. A judge is never going to hear it. United will, and this is kind of a term of art, buy its peace. And how much peace United buys is a question of, is a matter of how good her lawyer is. But see, this is, I'm sure Republicans, Repiglicans, Earthers, Deathers, Tenthers, Baggers, Booger Eaters, Birchers, Libertarians, what have you, I'm sure, well, this is just another sign of our litigious society gone mad, right? But it's not. This is the kind of thing that a court system exists to remedy on a civil basis. Not criminal, but civil. But in a country where the civil where the civil courts have been broken into a million tiny pieces, as is the case with many states in the United States, thanks to people like the United States Chamber of Commerce. You know, your state is a judicial hellhole, right? Well, that's when things get sideways. And it is sideways. Because, like it or not, man, like I said, coffee breaks over, back on your heads. Maybe I should have just stayed away from the microphone and we all could have just sat and basked in the warm post-holiday glow for a couple of more days. But the reality is, we have descended into fascism. We have militarized police with better armaments than some National Guard units that we have sent to Iraq and Afghanistan. We have State Trooper Rosenblatt there. Why are you videoing me? Because I'm an American and it's my right. Now, see, if he had said that, the young man, he probably would have been dragged out of the car. But it is. It really is. So that's just some of the insanity that we have that we can deal with this evening, if you wish. Hey, look, the phone lines are open to the extent that, well, I mean, we've got a nice little crowd of folks listening. And that's really neat considering that this was a spur-of-the-moment affair. Looking in on the chat room, which you too can go to and join in on, should you so desire. Good evening, Anatole. Good evening, Benedict. Good evening, News Ninja Carol Baker. Hey, good evening, John Fox. Got a busy work night ahead of him, I suspect. Good evening, Michael. Good evening, Richard. Good evening, Stockton Larry. Good evening, Texas T. Tim from L.A., Truth Seeker, and Will from Chicago. And, of course, good evening to Sparky. I don't know where Man Cave is this evening. Yeah, I understand, Michael. Sorry, Bob. I had that feeling looming in the background of the year to come. We're in some serious trouble. And by the way, if you go to my Facebook page, Bob Kincaid, and scroll down a ways, there's a lot of people post a lot of stuff on there. You'll see some video, and in fact, Carol Baker picked up on it and reposted it. You'll see some video that my dear friend and colleague Maria Gano recently shot of life in her holler down at the foot of the valley fill below the massive mountaintop removal operation that looms over her. Maria's got horses. And Maria's horses often drink from the creek. Well, over this holiday season, they haven't, the last few days, they haven't been able to. Because the coal company, Jupiter Coal, has poisoned the creek with something, we know not what. But suffice to say that even in Appalachistan, creeks are not supposed to look, and I know, there's that whole thing about being a land of milk and honey and all that. But the creek is not actually supposed to look like milk. Aw, that's nice. Jenny, up in Wisconsin, Jenny responded to my post that we're live this evening, 26 December 2014. Jenny responded by saying, "So glad you're on. House dog sitting by myself. Now I feel like I'm with friends." That's about as sweet as it comes. Hi, Jenny. Carol noting, and I apologize, Carol. This was really, really last minute stuff. Sorry, folks. I didn't know Bob Kincaid would be doing a live show tonight, but he is. It's Friday on the front porch. Come on over. There's drinks. Indeed. Y'all come. It's actually not even that cold out there on the front porch right now. And see, that's the thing, Carol. Not only did you not know I was going to do a program, I didn't know I was going to do a program. I might add that anybody who's glad there is a program can say thank you to Ferg. Because it was his idea. Let's see, it'll take me a minute to get on down here. And get to the video. Excellent. Looks like we're going to have a Jim Dandy Friday on the Front Porch Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. I just thought, I thought you might get a kick out of hearing what it's like when you try to call in a violation to the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection. It is, in fact, it's a real hoot. I mean, just let you know that they really, really are looking out for the well-being of people in this state. Like I said, Maria's water started running cloudy and milky looking when it's not supposed to. She did what she was supposed to do. And called it in. And this is the response that she got. Now, this is the water in the creek, Big Branch, remained gray and milky looking for 3 days. The Johnny on the spot investigators of the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection, however, well, they had some news.
Maria, this is Benny Campbell with the DEP down at Logan, calling you back with an update regarding regarding that rainwater coming down Big Branch behind your house. Mr. Joe Hager, the supervisor down there, him and Alan Coon, responded to that and was all over the top of the hill evaluating the sediment ditches in the pits.
All over the top of the hill. That's a handy locator, that top of the hill part.
And they also went down to the pond in your hollow there below the valley field and looked, went downstream of the pond, and they could not identify where this water was coming from. As a matter of fact, when they were there...
Now, wait. Okay, so let's listen to this real carefully, okay? They couldn't... You heard that. They couldn't identify where that water was coming from. So when you say couldn't identify where that water was coming from, that kind of means that you're acknowledging that that water kind of exists, right?
Identify where this water was coming from. And as a matter of fact, when they were there, the water evidently in your hollow had improved significantly. They did get some photographs of it. And we will send you an evaluation form that says exactly what I just leaving you here on your voicemail. So I just want to let you know they scoured the hillside and looked and you know, all the water they saw was clear. So, and like I said, they got there just as quickly as they could this morning. So that's the message I want to leave you. We will send you up. A complaint investigation form in the mail that says that.
Well, God bless you and Merry Christmas to all you DEP people down in Lagan. They went to the pond, Maria later pointed out on her Facebook page. So everybody knows there's two ponds in the headwaters of Big Branch Creek. Oh, well, they went to one of them. Right. So that was, you know, that was Maria Gonneau's Appalachian Christmas miracle. Just another day. Well, thank you, Sylvia. That's mighty nice of you. Sylvia says by email, subject line Friday. So glad you could be on today. What an oasis in a radio desert. Hey, Ferg, happy birthday. And thanks also to Ferg for his generosity in sharing his day. Yeah, by the way, I do love this line that, yes, Tim, our water's safe. It comes in jugs. I love this line that Will from Chicago has been using lately. Remember, listeners, to donate to the Horn. I don't think Soros Claus has stopped by this year. No, Soros Claus has not stopped by this year. Soros Claus has never been here. I'm beginning to think there's no such thing as Soros Claus, Will. But yeah, the PayPal interface is over at headonradionetwork.com. All help as we move toward the end of the year is deeply appreciated. Deeply indeed. Soros Claus. And this, oh, that's just the sanity clause. You can't fool me. I know there's no sanity clause. And meanwhile, with the end of the year fast approaching, I will make to the Horn Family Commune congregation the same promise I make every year. I will not play Dan Fogelberg's Another Auld Lang Syne. You know, about the guy who meets his old girlfriend in the grocery store and they wind up sitting in a parking lot drinking a six-pack of beer together. Yeah, no, I'm not going to play that song. Just won't. Can't make me. we do have a good gathering of people in for Friday on the front porch this evening, I'm told by Sparky. If you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch and would like to try, you are heartily invited to participate. All you need to do on Skype is send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, and he'll get you right set up. To participate in the group. And you're more than welcome so to do. Trying to find a good, I don't know, a good tune for a break. No. You know, it's the day after Christmas. Are we done yet? I don't know. Sorry, I'm just, this was such a spur-of-the-moment decision, I didn't even give any consideration to, you know, music. I don't know at all. Anybody got any requests, suggestions? No, Tim, I will not sing. And you can't make me. Let's see here. Tough call. Police story. Oh, hell. Boy, this is a punt. Whatever, just need to kill a few minutes to get the Horn Malloy Skype chat group going. What do you say? Yeah. So it's 16 minutes past the hour. The Gizmo line is open as well. The Gizmo line works for the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, and it's ready to go, too. Jump right in. This is the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. I hate myself for this. This is some lazy, lazy old DJing.
Leaving home out on the road. I've been down before. Somebody's trying to make me stay. You know I've got to be moving.
changing seats. That was a terrible, terrible bumper choice, but I got to give credit where credit is due. Had I not been flounging around trying to find a song, I would have seen Carol and others in the chat room suggesting I Get By With a Little Help from My Friends by Joe Cocker, which would have been really, really fitting. Yeah. Look, with no advance warning, and this is just how good he is marshaling the Horn Malloy Skype chat group together with no advance warning whatsoever. Sparky has thrown out the breadcrumbs, put up the bat signal, and yea, verily, we have an extraordinary, ordinary roundtable for Friday on the front porch. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob. We weren't supposed to start till 9 o'clock your time tonight with the group. So it caught me on by surprise. I just put up the message in the chat room so I could get people later,
right?
Earlier today, but I wasn't out in the man cave because it's kind of cold today out there, kind of a windy, bone-chilling cold. I didn't want to fire up the heater yet, in case I want to go out there later.
Right. Well, I can certainly dig that, but again, my apologies for kind of catching you out and Carol and others, but it was just it seemed propitious. When Ferg said, why don't you do a show, Dad? So, yeah, okay. I got sent back to work. But this isn't work. This is a joy. You know that. We've got...
Labor of love.
Yeah, exactly. And has been for a very long time.
I'm going to add a couple other people here.
Okay. Well, we've already got... hey, Barbie.
Hey, dear.
How are you?
I'm awesome. Thanks for asking.
Well, yes, you are. I mean, you were saying?
Hello.
Hey, there's Abel.
Hi, how are y'all?
Oh, good, 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 good. How's the 27th of December looking?
It's wet and chilly. It's nice.
Cool, cool. And we also have, in addition to Carol Abel, we have Carol Baker. Hey, Carol.
Captain, my captain.
Where?
Hi, Carol.
Hello, Abel.
So, I mean, I was kind of moving slow by the time, but everybody had a lovely day yesterday.
Yes.
Or the day before, pizza. Or
yeah.
You didn't have to drive 40 miles for no particular good reason at all, Carol?
No, I absolutely did not. I stayed at my little cabin in the woods all by myself, and it was peaceful and quiet and wonderful and warm. So, yeah, I was a happy camper.
Excellent. Barbie, how was the day there in, well, among the Iowegians?
Cloudy, overcast, and warm.
Warm in Iowa.
Yep. Yep.
Is that just how December usually is, late December in Iowa? Wasteland?
Absolutely not. We're usually knee-deep in snow.
Not a flake on the ground, is there?
Not a flake on the ground.
You know,
I love it.
You know, well, I was going to say, but that doesn't bode well, because that means that you'll probably have a larger than usual contingent of Republicans descending upon your state in advance of the caucuses a year from this January.
You're probably right.
And you know, that there's nothing that'll even slow them down.
Delete.
Question coming from the chat room from Stockton Larry. Carol, does Carol's cabin in the woods have Wi-Fi?
Of course I have Wi-Fi. If I didn't have Wi-Fi, I wouldn't be here in all my glorious splendor.
Well, true, true, true. I mean, but we don't make any assumptions about Hooterville.
But you mean, like, am I the only sane person here? Yes.
So did the Hootervillians shoot off their shooting guns last night? And
no, they'll do that a week from Wednesday night on New Year's Eve. The last week in December, it's legal to purchase and to shoot off fireworks. So on New Year's Eve, they shoot off fireworks here.
Now,
and drink and shoot off their guns. And
So being Missouri, I mean, are y'all, because see, we get fireworks here in West Virginia, but we're not allowed to have any of the fun ones. Only the coal companies can have those. But we only get the ones that sparkle and fizz, but none of the really good big banging. Y'all get the quality ones?
Oh, yeah. They do the big aerials. They go up on the dam and shoot them off on the dam. On the dam.
Damn.
Yeah, exactly. And I have like a front row seat.
I was going to say, that was the dam that holds back Lake Hooterville?
It's the dam that keeps Lake Hooterville from flooding thousands of acres of farmland.
Got it. Let's see. Good evening, Haley. You just wandered in. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here, and I'm just been back from visiting my folks for the last 2.5 hours, and all is well here. My dog is a little tired. He got to visit, got to go with me yesterday, and he's just kind of laying around now.
Biscuits all wore out?
Yes, he's kind of wore out. He's just taking it easy now.
Wonderful. Well, and hey, there's Tim-san.
Konnichiwa, or actually, konbawa, Bob-san.
Konbawa, Tim-san. B. Gates.
Ikaga desu ka? Or how are you?
I'm fat and happy.
Yeah, same here. After all the food we had last night, woo.
I do it to myself every year because I snack as I cook.
Right.
And by the time dinner's ready, I'm like, "Are you kidding? Eat."
Well, our biggest holiday or festival that we have in our family, especially being Japanese, isn't Christmas. It's New Year's, and I think I should get like a photo and I'll post it on Facebook. Of what we're going to eat. It's going to be big. every year, the same thing. And I'll share it with you people. I'll be nice and do that.
You people.
Yeah.
So I did see your posting, Tim. The neighbors got loud and raucous and made merry last night.
Oh, geez. So I put earplugs in. Wait till New Year's. New Year's Eve. It's going to be noisy as hell.
Oh, it's become part of my New Year's celebration.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's more fun listening to Tim's neighbors than New Year's boring Eve on ABC.
I mean, you'll hear bang, bang. You know what? I might go to my parents' place instead this year, though, because it'll be a lot more quiet so I could sleep. Sorry, Bob.
Oh, you're just no fun, Tim.
Well, just this year. Next year, we'll.
Okay.
I think Malloy's doing a New Year's Eve show this year, so.
Yeah, he is. I noticed that. So,
we'll be starting a group after that.
Right, exactly. So I'll just do the regular hours, and then Malloy will do what Malloy does, and yeah, it'll be a happy little New Year's Eve. So, anybody got any burrs under the saddle, bees under the bonnet? Or are we too entirely wiped out by the holidays? And because it really did, it felt like coffee breaks over back on your head for me.
No, but Congress isn't in session, so they haven't been able to do anything. Outright, you know, they were too busy celebrating with their families to say anything insulting to some select group.
I got a new pair of house shoes to go with our new flooring. Can't be walking around the house barefoot on hardwood floors now.
Yeah, they get kind of cold, don't they?
Yeah.
Bone chilling cold, huh, Duncan? You know how it gets cold up during the wintertime in California?
Well, we're supposed to get almost to freezing here in a couple days.
Hell, it's 83 degrees a couple days ago here, down here.
I mean, some of our Decembers and Januaries, we've had pipes freeze and everything else happen. You drive through downtown area and people's sprinklers will be on, you know, ice sculptures. things break, shoot water all over trees and make the deals. You know, it didn't even have to rain, but because we never get freezing rain.
What's that? I remember Lottie said that he was in Washington, and he said there was a freeze up there, and everyone was bundled up, and he was walking in shorts and a T-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
I said, it's warm.
We had a big freeze back in the 80s when I was working in Reading. I went into the electrical wholesale house, and as soon as I walked in, the counter guy just says, and do not ask for heat trace tape. We don't have any.
Well, I don't care what anybody says. It's still cold, 40 degrees.
Plumbers were having a field day. They're making them a ton of money then.
Well, it's 53 degrees here right now, and it's supposed to be down to single digits by Tuesday morning.
Yeah, but out here, it was like 17, 18 degrees this one winter out here.
Oh, I wanted to. I got a couple of nice emails from the international side of the Horn Family Commune Congregation. I want to share with you guys. This one comes in from Pim in Singapore. Is that just freaking cool? I mean, China, Singapore, Japan, Australia, various parts of Europe. We haven't broken through to South America, the countries of South America or the African countries yet, but I'm convinced that we can. Pim writes from Singapore. First of all, regardless of your atheistic principles, I wanted to wish you and the Horn community a wonderful Christmas and great holidays. I'm finally catching up with the Horn podcasts over the break and realized I've been a stranger for far too long. This year has been hectic, and I've mostly caught the ongoings at the Horn while on flights and in airports in Asia. Thank you for the great work you're doing. The Horn, and you know, this is not directed just at me. This is directed at the community we've built. Thank you for the great work you're doing. The Horn is truly unique, and it's so important that you stay on the air, especially in these maddening times. Even though Obama's newfound Dirty Harry persona, Cuba, China climate deal, does bring a smile in my heart. Living in Singapore, and I find this fascinating. Living in Singapore and spending much time in Indonesia, India, and Thailand, we have a sense that even though there are tremendous problems here to be solved, there's still a real possibility that tomorrow will be better than today. Following the news in the U.S., it's difficult to keep that sense of hope alive because it seems increasingly evident that the fix is in. You, and I mean, put this on a wall, carve this on, in stone or something. This is amazing. You and the Hornistas are really just the very few who are in a fair and unbiased way shedding light on what's really happening, something that was supposed to be the job of the media. I don't know how big the Horn community is, but I hope it's growing fast and furious. Yeah. Best wishes, Pim from Tropical Singapore. I read that earlier today and read it and reread it and just, wow.
That's very cool.
Well, it is, and Carol, it points out, I mean, it Pim also brings to the discussion the question of what has happened to America's role in the world. You know, whatever our faults were, it used to be that, you know, we had a reputation for trying to solve problems. One of the things that I fear as we enter into the year that we arbitrarily named 2015 is that there may be a view in the world that the United States has stopped solving problem and started being the problem. And I think that's a fair question. Is it? Have we become the problem?
I tend to think so.
I definitely think so.
Expand, please.
Well, I mean, who has started the wars of recent in the last 20 or 30 years? Everybody's dumping on Putin. I think Putin has been very restrained. He didn't invade Russia. If he had, everybody actually would have known about it because there'd be pictures. But they keep saying that, and he sent food aid, and I'm sure there's fighters over in the east. But generally speaking, Russia has tried to be a good neighbor and has been supplying fuel to the Ukraine for a year or more with no payment at all until recently when he said he's not sending any more until somebody pays him, and they finally paid him. I'm sure it was EU funds. But, I mean, the whole thing that happened last winter in Ukraine was a coup d'etat. You know, they elected somebody legit, and the United States and NATO went in there and helped overthrow that government, and now they've got Nazis running around in Ukraine? I mean, what year is this?
Well, I think there's a larger discussion to be had about the rise of right-wing fascism in Europe, and it's not just Ukraine. When you consider, for instance, the incredible intolerance for gender diversity in, for instance, the Russian Federation or whatever we're calling it these days, that's cause for deep concern. But fascism has reared its head in Germany, in Ukraine, in Poland, in Greece, in Italy, in Norway, to a certain extent in Sweden. It is on the rise again, I think, because that generation that fought fascism off the first time through it is largely gone now. But in point of fact, for me the question is, if America is the problem, how do we stop? Is it possible? How do we stop being the problem? Or is it possible to stop being the problem? And what does it look like if we have, or if we do, try to stop being the problem?
We have to get off our asses and vote.
We have to find out who's counting the votes, too. I mean, I think Brad Friedman has done such great work because he exposed how easy it is to flip boats. It doesn't have to look like it did in Florida in 2000. It can be a lot more subtle, but I don't trust a black box boat that doesn't give you an audit trail. Not when you do exit polls and you find people voted for one guy and then the other guy wins. They stopped actually doing exit polls because they diverged so badly and it was becoming embarrassing, you know. We need vote monitors and counters in America, not just in marginal countries, but, you know, fascism is one of those things. It's a outgrowth of psychopathy. It's one of the ways psychopathy expresses itself. And in Europe, because of their traditions, it looks like the Nazis, because they all still have, I think they still all have their costumes in the back of the closet. But in America, it doesn't express the same way, because that's not part of our history, is to have swastika armbands.
Right. And
but
it's
fascism.
Well, and I think you've latched onto something there, Carol, in that, you know, Henry Wallace warned the country back in the 1940s that fascism was coming and warned us about what it would look like. I don't guess we took it. I don't guess we took the advice or heeded the warning. But I've mentioned this on the program in the past, we have this notion that fascism has to come with menacing black uniforms and death's head caps. You know what? It can come in the form of a police officer who looks at you and says, you quit videoing me or I'm going to find some way to make the DA throw you in jail.
Bob, I've got to find the article that I read a couple of weeks ago, and it was about how we choose who actually gets to run for office. And a very famous guy, God, I can't remember, I can't believe I didn't bookmark this, said I don't give a shit who you vote for as long as I get to pick the candidate.
Boss Tweed.
There
Tammany
you go.
Hall.
And so we get a choice of the lesser of two who gives a fucks, and that's the whole money in politics thing is problematic when people get to buy their candidates.
Well, exactly. And I was going to raise that issue when you first said we've got to get out and vote. Got to have somebody to vote for, too. And I think that's actually the bigger question. As we saw with the election of 2008, the presidential election, people can be motivated to get off their duffs and go out and vote. But if the choice, as it's beginning to look in 2016, is not particularly palatable, what are people going out and voting for?
Bob, I've had people ask me repeatedly, why don't you run for office? Why don't you run for office? Well, let's see. I've got boobs and a virginia, and I've openly admitted to using recreational drugs in my youth and to loving many men in the biblical sense, and I'm not ashamed of any of it. And I have this, like, sense of honesty, and I can't be bought. So there you go. That's why I won't run for office.
Not to mention the billionaire bank account that you don't have.
Well,
Bob,
that.
Sorry, Bob.
Yeller.
I got to tell you that Eugene Debs said once, he said, look, I'd rather vote for who I want and not get it or get that person rather than vote for who I don't want and get that person.
Oh, yeah. That's very true. And in fact, Carol, just to go back, because if anybody wants to, they can maybe hunt it down. I think you and I saw the same thing. I saw it on Facebook, only it was actually a video, and it was a presentation by Lawrence Lessig. And it was just...
I think that was it.
Because he referenced that Boss Tweed quote, and he also referenced the fact that what we have here in the U.S. is pre-filtering.
Blair, you need to mute.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know that I didn't mute.
But it's the filters in front of the electoral process that make the process itself subject to so much criticism. Let's make a little list of people that we would trust in office, who we know will never be in office.
Who are still alive.
Yeah. I mean, how about, pick me a scientist.
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
There. Would you trust that man to exercise governmental functions with the best interest of the American people at heart?
With my life.
Yep. Hell, Ralph Nader.
Okay, Ralph.
Ralph is the real deal. He always has been. He's. I don't know. He's a very unusual man, and I don't think he has a chance because he's too honest.
Well, that's a function of campaigning.
He's pissed off. I can say that he has upset more people, and surprisingly, more Democrats, because they blame him for Gore not winning the election or for Gore not prevailing in that election, number one, and they also say that he's got so big of an ego that it's all about Ralph. It's not about anybody else but Ralph. So if you could deconstruct that, I'd like you to do that.
I don't see much ego. I see him honing in on serious issues that nobody wants to touch.
The Democrats they hate the man. They hate the man worse than they hate Republicans.
That says more about them than it does about him.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that that's true.
I know I've heard all the stuff about people saying he threw the election, but I've never really gotten a good explanation from anybody on either side as to why Gore walked away instead of fighting for what he actually won. And I was living in Florida at the time, in 2000, and people down there were really thrilled that the Supreme Court was getting to nominate the king.
Well, so here's where I bring in a different perspective on 2000. I don't like talking about Florida in 2000. Carol, you brought up video game voting. I think that was in play, or, you know, not so much in play, but, you know, my God, the business with the Chads, yada, 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 the dirty politic and the whatever. If Al Gore had carried his home state, we would not be talking about Florida. If Al Gore had, as every Democratic presidential candidate who was his predecessor for a generation, if Al Gore had carried West Virginia, Florida would have been a non-issue, even had Bush won it outright. But the one beef I have with Nader is a statement that he made that is at least in part true, but it is not true as a blanket statement. And that's the claim that he made in the election of 2000, that there was no difference between Democrats and Republicans.
I think if you look at it from a very high level, he might be true. He might be correct about that. The thing is that on social issues, the Democrats always come out looking like human beings, but when it comes to financial issues, which are really actually more important, because if you don't have a decent financial footing, your country slides, and then all the other issues are secondary.
But Carol, we learned in short order that there certainly was a difference between, say, a Gore presidency and a Bush presidency.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, but what we're not looking at is that what most of the federal tax money goes for the military industrial complex and goes for a very conservative, if you can, to put it mildly, foreign policy. And the Democrats and the Republicans seem to be supporting the same basic goals and the same structure of the foreign policy and the military-industrial complex. And that's where most of the money goes, and that's where people's brains seem to be at in both parties predominantly. There are differences, certainly, between the Democrats and the Republicans on social issues. That's true. But when you look at how much money gets spent and how much time gets spent talking about military and in the industrial complex, and I don't want to repeat myself seven times, you get the general drift of what I'm saying. I don't need to repeat myself.
Well, think of it this way. Look at Congress, which is where the laws actually start. If they're not under the control of some normalcy, then everything is chaotic. And we don't really have any Bernie Sanders on the right hand. But on the left hand, we do have people that resemble the people like John Boehner and some of the more sanctimonious right wing. So, you know, we've got nobody in their camp, and they've got people in our camp. And that's what Nader keeps seeing, is that financial control, which determines whether your country thrives, is agreed upon by all sides. It's like this.
That they're opposite sides of the same coin. I get that. And Carol, you're far better at this than Baker. You're far better at this. You're far better at this than I am. I think that Lawrence Lessig clip was an upworthy clip that I saw on Facebook. If we could find that and sell and circulate that, I think it would probably be beneficial, because what he says about the and ultimately it turns into an argument about money and politics and how to go forward. And I like potential solutions, and they're not cockamamie solutions he's talking about. So, I mean, if you run across that, you know, share it around, put it on my page, you know, whatever helps, and then folks can look for it. Because there's some concrete stuff there, and he manages to talk about all of this without, I think, ever saying Ralph Nader. But to get back to the point of departure I had, where Carol Baker mentioned Neil deGrasse Tyson, Carol Abel, you mentioned Ralph Nader. There are, and here's where it becomes fascinating for me. I know people that none of you know, and you know people I don't know. And we may be some people we all know that we would gladly trust with the reins of government. But ain't a one of us ever going to get there because of the money issue. And that's, you know, I mentioned the other night that study was out from Princeton that Princeton, lo and behold, has discovered that the United States is no longer a democracy, which makes me crazy because, you know, my question is always, when were we ever one? And what would it, you know, Ben Franklin said, for instance, that a public servant who served and then went home should consider himself as having had a promotion. He's gone from being a servant to the boss. I guess
money changes all of that. Money makes the servants the owners now.
Well, hasn't money always been a big issue in who either, you know, who runs, who gets anointed to run, who chooses to run? You have to be part of a clique. You have to be part of a political elite, whether you've got money or not. I mean, I'm talking about all throughout history. I'm not talking about the last 20 years. Hasn't money or connection been a big part? Because back when you had these conventions before, you had party reforms like in the 1970s in the Democratic Party and what have you, the bosses in the back room used to choose who we vote for. So the bosses made the decision about whether or not this person was going to run for president or this person was going to run for Congress, and the little person still didn't have the you know, the little people still voted for the for whoever the political insiders wanted, or is it different now than it was then? I don't know.
Well, consider, what was it, Charles Beard's Economic Theory of the Constitution, 1919, for which
guess who was going to read that and provide a report?
Yeah,
and I still plan on doing that, but I haven't done it yet.
Well, and by the way, for all of us participating in this Friday on the Front Porch Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable this evening, a note coming in from Danny. Danny writes and says, "So glad you're on live tonight, which I know even you were not expecting. Thank you, Ferg, and happy birthday."
Yeah, happy birthday, Ferg.
I will tell him. He says, "I'm driving from my parents' home on the coast in Ocean Springs, Mississippi, back to my estate, and by that I mean my three cats, humble home that doubles as my dump, in Baton Beige, Rouge." Danny's a witty one. "You're making the drive so much more pleasurable. Will you be playing White Wine in the Sun, as it's the only Christmas-themed song I like?" And the answer to that is, well, we played that Christmas Eve. But if you'll check that archive, it's right in there.
Sorry I interrupted you, Bob.
What?
I'm sorry that I interrupted you. We were going to explain about Charles Beard's economic interpretation of the Constitution, 1913, and I butted it in.
Oh, that's okay. Right now, I'm just trying to finish Danny's email.
Okay, thank you.
Danny says, "Actually, I love that song, White Wine in the Sun." Tim mentioned the usual Christmas songs make me want to hurl myself off the nearest bridge or tall building. So Danny concludes saying, "Thanks, and again, I'm so glad you're on for the rest of my trip." Well, safe travels, Danny, and we're awfully glad to be sharing your ride. So it goes both ways. But no, all I was saying is that Charles Beard argues that economics were a central part of the formation of the Constitution, and that there has always been money in politics, and that, you know, it's absolutely true. That's why some pauper wasn't president of the United States instead of, you know, say George Washington, who was probably among the richest men in the fledgling nation.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Sparky.
I saw it on Facebook today. I don't know if anybody else saw it, but Bernie Sanders is going to make a decision by March whether he's going to run for president and whether he'll run as a Democrat or an independent. I don't know if anybody else saw that.
I think he's trying to decide if he's going to be able to get enough money together to do it. He knows how much it's going to cost, so he doesn't want to have to.
He's been working on a pretty big database of people through some of the groups that support him and everything. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, he learned a lesson through Barack Obama when he ran in 2008. I mean, the database of people they had, I mean, what was it? I mean, half the or all the money raised was small donations.
And who invented that, by the way?
That'd be the guy in Vermont.
That would be Howard Dean.
well, he was still chair then.
Right. So that tells us, that tells us a little bit about where we need to go. Just from a local politics angle back here in almost level west by Cole, Virginia, Stan. I'm proud of them. I am freaking proud of them. They didn't go all the way, but they took a few steps down the road, and the journey of 1,000 miles begins with one pratfall, and I'm proud of the Fayette County, West Virginia Democratic Executive Committee, because lo and behold, they screwed their courage to the sticking place and recently passed a resolution calling for a guy named Larry Puccio, who is a little troll, who is he's a creature, he's a thing that Joe Manchin controls. He's like a machine, you know. I mean, you just wind him up, and the Fayette County, West Virginia Democratic Executive Committee, after the hiding that we took, that West Virginia Democrats took for a variety of reasons in the last election, called on Larry Puccio to step the hell down, quit. And you know, that's usually what you do when you get your ass handed to you in an election. You go, well, okay, I quit. Well, he's not doing it because Joe hasn't told him that he has to. But I was proud of him for making the call, and I wish more Democratic executive committees would do that in this state. And the reason I said they didn't go far enough is because the next statement is, "Dear Joe Manchin, you're not fooling anybody. Go be a Republican." And I think, and I mention that because I think that's one, that's another angle that we need to consider. That's the reason I mentioned, when you were talking about fundraising, Sparky. You know, it was Howard Dean that came up with that. It was Howard Dean who came up with the 50-state strategy. It was Howard Dean who went a long way toward making the White House a possibility for Barack Obama. And Howard Dean is the one who said he was from the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party. I think we as progressives, if we want something different, kind of need to be supporting progressive candidates. And what you said earlier, Carol, about Bernie's trying to decide whether to run as an independent or a Democrat, I pray God he runs as a Democrat. He can do more even if he loses in the primaries than he can as an independent.
I don't think he could actually run as an independent. I'm not sure how the rest of it is a two-party country.
Well, and it's a and more than that, it's a system that is first past the post and winner take all. So an independent might advance some ideas. The person who's the candidate whose views are furthest away from the independent is the one who wins. And Bernie knows that. He runs as an independent. Hell, he's actually a socialist. Runs as an independent in Vermont, but that's because that's Vermont. It won't play in the rest of the country.
Well, now, if he mentions that he's actually a socialist, everybody would freak out.
He's been traveling around the country for the last year doing.
Yes, he has, and he's been people. and he's been turning a lot of heads.
So I think he's started some little base operations somewhere, you know. He's got people on his side all over the place. He even did a tour of the South.
Bernie
has the Friends of Bernie Sanders group that sends out emails, and he also has done fundraising all over the country asking people to support. I don't know what people are supporting exactly, but they're supporting something with that money.
Well, he's been doing an hour with Tom Hartman every week for years now, and I think a lot of people got exposed to him that way.
But then I've heard that Bernie, as far as left is concerned, isn't really considered left by European or by Australian or by, you know, by European standards. And I've been hearing that.
I don't think anybody is left by... it depends on which European country you're talking about. If you look to the civilized Scandinavian countries, I suspect, and having conjured him, it's possible we may yet hear from our buddy Scott in days to come after what I say. I don't think there's anybody in the left in the Scandinavian countries who thinks that there is even a left at all in the United States. And, you know, I'd kind of join up with them. You know, when
I don't think there's a left.
Is that you, Carol?
Yeah, I don't think there's a left, Bob. I think that the left has been drugged to the center as the right has fallen off their end of the flat earth.
Jeffrey's in the group this evening. Good evening, Jeffrey.
Hope his microphone works. So he was having problems.
Okay. Well, I was gonna ask Jeffrey because you know Jeffrey's in Holland.
There he is.
Hi, man. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Got you good, Jeffrey.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Hi, Jeff. I thought we'd lost you, and I've been missing you. I really have, Jeff. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Well,
what I
was asking is, does what passes for the American left even vaguely resemble the left in Europe?
The left in Europe is differs from the left in, yeah, it differs. Because we see the left in America as centralist right wing or something like that.
I rest my case. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
I don't know if that's the right term, but something like that, you know.
Yeah, but this the European left view of the United States is that the United States is a right wing country.
That's true.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure of that, and I appreciate the input, because see, all we can muster as an American left, for the most part, is saying, gosh, wouldn't it be nice if everybody who was sick got to go to the doctor and maybe had some checkups once in a while and didn't have to bleed out of their wallet to have them? Goodness me, we are such leftists. Wouldn't it be great if our highways weren't degrading into freaking gravel? Yeah, wow, that's really left, isn't it? And, of course, it's not. So, Carol Baker, Carol Abel, you know, I think, Larry, I think we're all on the same page with this.
The Europeans I've talked to over the years really take it down to too much money flowing into politics in America.
And a campaign season that lasts forever. You know, when we hear from our friends in the UK where the campaign season, and I'm not sure how, John Fox, are you still in the room? How long is a campaign season in Australia? But when other countries look at us where we're in a permanent campaign mode that just, January's coming, January 2015, and by March, we'll be seeing a process giving, you know, serious, fully 18, and of course, as I was going to say, even as the UK and Australia prove, having a shortened campaign season doesn't necessarily mean you get the right result.
Indeed not. Poor choices all around, though.
Yeah.
But there isn't this huge dump of money on the media corporations just to run a candidate, which is where all the money evaporates. It's like the media has more at stake in running this perpetual political crap than anybody else does, because they're the big winners. It's almost like a game for them, you know? It's
billions. I think you just hit on something there. It's a game, and everything plays out as a TV show, and everything now that's a TV show is a reality TV show.
Exactly. It's also another hallmark of psychopaths that they view everything as a game. Everything is winning and losing. That's all that matters. And it really comes down to just that simple a resolution that, unless they're winning. You know that whole Charlie Sheen thing where he kept saying winning with that demonic look on his face?
Yeah.
That is like a hallmark characteristic of a psychopath, that both the look and the way of viewing everything is a great game, and the only point of your being on this planet is to win, whatever that means in your life. Winning.
Right.
It's really crazy.
I've long talked about this whole idea of absolute mutual exclusivity and the zero-sum game that is played. If I treat blah people with respect, then I'm automatically taking respect away from the police. That's not true. If I think that poor people should not go hungry, well then I'm starting a class war on rich people. That's patently untrue. It's bullshit.
They always accuse the other of what they're actually doing themselves.
That's one of their hallmarks.
Projection.
I think life is much more nuanced than that.
It's all a game to them, though. I mean, you know, people dying is, they don't feel anything. They don't, they're not capable of feeling anything. It's just a game. It's a numbers count. It's cold and chilling, but that's really the mindset that is running everything on this planet right now. All you do is look, you know, it's like follow the money. Look for the effects. They're not unintentional. Terrorism is a way of controlling people. Everybody recognizes that now. And these people that blabber on about how they're going to protect us from shit, they didn't protect us from the one time we actually had some shit. Oh, but as soon as after September 11th, now we're protecting you.
Right.
What?
And where it was after 9/11. It was after 9/11 that the police became militarized and became a private security force for the 1%.
Or overtly. I think that's probably always been the case, especially in larger cities. I mean, they started out as Pinkertons, and now they're Pinkertons in army uniforms. But yes, it's very overt now. It's like, wasn't it Cheney that said the gloves come off?
That sounds about right.
And I think that euphemism is across the board. It's like the financial gloves came off. They just scammed and stole for the first 8 years of this millennium. And that's still not enough. That's, you know, I think Mike Malloy's called it, it's almost like a hoarding. It's almost like they're hoarding money, like sick people hoard newspapers and, you know, fast food wrappers or whatever.
Right.
Except they do it with money and property, and yeah, it doesn't matter who gets in the way. Yeah.
Like, I hoard books and papers. But their situation is a lot more, has a lot more effects on the mass society and my own private, you know, behavior, because I don't have millions of dollars that I'm sucking off the rest of the society. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, speaking of police, Bob, did you hear the story that came out of Ferguson from last night?
No, since it's not Christmas Eve anymore, I was hoping you might update us, Carol.
Well, apparently last night, somebody caught it on video, someone thought it would be appropriate to drive over the Michael Brown Memorial on Canfield Drive, where he was shot, and just trashed it. And calls were made to police, who were completely unaffected by it. And the Washington Post called Ferguson's police department. Officer Timothy Zoll, the Ferguson Police Department's public relations officer, said no crime had been reported in connection to the memorial's destruction. And he suggested that the department might look into any video of the incident, but he didn't specify whether they would investigate. I didn't know that a crime had occurred, Zoll said Friday, but a pile of trash in the middle of the street. The Washington Post is making a call over this.
Pile of trash.
Go focus on. Yeah, yeah, that's their attitude.
Jesus.
And then why the black community is in an uproar.
Yeah, infuriated even.
I suppose some people would say that this is minor, but it's exactly that kind of out hunting down another wrong color jaywalking. It's a waste of time.
And what was the shooting that went down a couple of nights ago, Carol?
From what I understand, it was, I haven't gotten all the details because I've been busy with, from what I understand, there was some sort of a ruckus in front of a convenience store. The police claim that this young black man aimed a gun at them and swear they have the video to prove it, although I've watched that video 10 times, can't see a gun. For the first 2 hours, there was no mention of a gun, and then suddenly, after 2 hours, there was a gun. So, should I be suspicious of the Ferguson police? Or, well, it wasn't the Ferguson Police Department. It was
so,
the,
damn, wait a minute. What? Did the gun fold in from Geedy Prime or something?
I have absolutely no idea where the gun came from, but it sounds like a throwdown.
The video I saw, you could see the kid raise his arm like he was pointing a gun at the cop.
You can see the kid raise his arm, but you can't see a gun in his hand.
No.
Who knows? Maybe he was pointing.
And they usually probably just reacted with hair trigger. What is it? Hair trigger emotions?
No.
Hair trigger reaction.
Missouri cops?
Yeah. You know, they saw the guy pointing, and then they said, "Oops, gonna point it at me," just like that kid in Cleveland with the toy water pistol, and they just. All they do is take a look at it and just decide that they're going to shoot it or shoot him.
Or the pill bottle that magically became a gun. Oops.
Yep.
It literally shoot first and ask questions later.
I was afraid for my life. And you're off. You're scot-free.
Aren't we kind of back to the old Wild West shiz? And this is the stuff we heard about the Wild West?
We've never been away from the Wild West.
I know, but it's so overt now. It's going to have any.
Hang on. I want to push back on that for a minute. There was a time, Larry referenced the Wild West, and Carol Abel, you said, in Dodge City, Kansas, you could not wear your Freedom Protector into the saloon.
Well, that's just reality, Bob. I'm not talking about what actually happened. I'm talking about the mystique that's been built up.
Western movies and the Western TV shows and all that stuff, and that's where people get... That's part of the reason why you have this family values thing, where you have a bunch of Republicans that think that the real family was Ozzie and Harriet and Father Knows Best.
Donna Reed.
You know, and My Three Sons and all that stuff. People are raised on television. That's how they get socialized. You know, that's why I don't watch it so much, because I don't want to be socialized by it. Sorry.
So, you know, Bob, you're right that in reality they had enough common sense to check their guns at the door kind of thing. But that isn't the West that was portrayed to us as children.
And I mean, it's even worth noting that... we can extend that. Not only was it not the status quo in the Wild West, it wasn't the status quo in the era of the framers. Everybody wasn't walking down the street with their Kentucky squirrel rifle in hand. We are, and that's what I was talking about at the beginning of the program with the, you know, with the notion that we have descended into police state status, and we have descended into fascism.
I think it's been a long descent.
Well, I think Fox News helped it kick in into overdrive when it started making people scared.
That really helps. If you study German history, we're somewhere in the late 30s, but this really began with Nixon, when Nixon was allowed to walk free from obvious crime. That kind of gave everybody all the way down the line the feeling that, well, we can get away with this shit because they're getting away with it.
I think a lot of this starts arguably unintentionally with the creation in thereabouts 1948. Of the national security state.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when Dwight Eisenhower is saying that every bomb we produce, every tank we build, every plane we build is another school, another road that we won't build, and that's 1960. I mean, if you're looking for a demarcation line of that was then and this is now, I think that's that moment.
I wish he'd said it a few years earlier.
Oh, But would it have made any difference?
Well, he could have started the job. I think Kennedy picked up the link at that point and was trying to control the secret deep state and got murdered for it. And it's been coming out more and more obviously since then. I mean, it's pretty obvious when your president gets murdered right in front of you, and then his murderer gets murdered right in front of you. It's like, whoa, what's going on here? This is, we've descended into some kind of alternative universe, and we've been there ever since.
But what I find interesting, and we talked about this a little bit a couple of nights ago, is that when the Princeton researchers who were talking about democracy addressed it, they said their analysis was of the time period from 1981 to the present. And that is the active deconstruction of America by the modern Republican Party. And the modern Republican Party is not the Eisenhower Republican Party. It's not even the Hoover, Coolidge, Warren G. Harding Republican Party. It's not the Nixon Republican Party. It is a Republican Party of a whole new level, degree, and dynamic of absolute right wing, and by that I mean fascist insurgency. I don't care how many times Chris Matthews screeches into the microphone that, by God, old Tipper and Ronnie really got things done, that's a load of bullshit. What gets Chris Matthews so damp about is it was nothing more than Democrats repeatedly in the majority in the Congress capitulating to that greasy-headed, empty-headed, old reactionary, anti-communist, anti-communist, fascist B-movie actor, and the weirdo cabal with which he surrounded himself.
Bob, when Reagan was considered to be on the left in the 30s and 40s, was he as much as a bubblehead, as a lefty, as he was as a righty?
Well, he never was a lefty. There's an apocryphal story that went around Hollywood that he tried to join the Communist Party in the 1930s, but the commies just blackballed him every time his name came up for a vote. And that is what made him an anti-communist. It was just pure venal, jaded jealousy. Because all the cool people were commies in Hollywood, apparently. That's what we're supposed to understand through the myth. Hey, let me take a moment here at 22 minutes past the hour in what has been a Friday on the front porch that has just been flying by to extend some profound and abiding thanks to both... extend some abiding thanks to both Rocco and to our buddy Irish Dave. The help in keeping this all going is much appreciated, and anybody else who wants to jump into that effort is more than welcome to do so. The PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com. And now we can continue. And my apologies, by the way, for everyone who has experienced stream interruptions. We're just buffering some tonight. It's kind of windy outside, and who knows? Who knows?
You know, Bob, I just wish I felt, I'm glad I'm in this group. I wish that we had more support for our perspective on things from the wider society. It feels awfully, fragile and vulnerable out here.
I'm not engaging in competition with you, Larry, but if you feel fragile and vulnerable in a place like Berkeley, imagine what it feels like in a little town in West Virginia. And I'm not taking into account the physical limitations that you have. I'm just talking about politics, society, and culture. I would, what little time I was in San Francisco those few days, I felt like I was in a different country.
You were.
I have no doubt that it's probably just... Seattle would feel like a different country.
Oh, yes.
L.A. would feel like a different country. New York damn sure feels like a different country. Boston is a different country. But that's from the perspective of a hillbilly. Because
that's only because, you know, Berkeley is on the left, but also you understand that my doctor was saying, Larry, if you were to go up to where the U.S. Military Academy is, up in West Point in New York, they are like Berkeley, but they are on the other side of the spectrum. So their culture is like Berkeley's, but it's on the right. It's on the right wing.
Well, I think Larry, if you were to try to find somewhere even remotely resembling Berkeley, your best bet would be to go to, say, Madison, Wisconsin. Because there's still some of that left there in Madison. But for me, what makes so many different places feel like a different country to me is the fact that there aren't a lot of places where the rest of America lives where the inhabitants of the area are bombed every day. We are. And just by way of a little shift in conversation, there was news out just a few days ago from the EPA. It was supposed to be a big deal because it was the first ever regulations of coal ash issued by the EPA. Now, let's remember, coal ash contains highly concentrated amounts of mercury. It contains selenium in concentrated amounts. It contains magnesium, manganese, aluminum, cadmium. Pretty much the heavy metal spectrum of the periodic table of the elements. In issuing its first ever regulations regarding coal ash, the Obama, you know, that Kenyan Muslim socialist you slurper who's trying to drag us all down into a communist hellhole. Yeah, the Obama EPA could not quite find its way clear to call coal ash hazardous waste.
But they
ban Chinese rocker because coal ash.
Yeah, there was that. Arsenic, chromium, mercury, lead, the second largest form of waste generated in the United States. And we've dumped it on frozen rivers, the Missouri River. We've dumped so-called cinders on our roads in frozen winter in West Virginia for eons.
But it's coal ash.
But it's not toxic waste. If it gets poisoned for a very long time, but it's not toxic waste.
30, 40 years.
Hey, Sparky, I'm having. No, go.
What's going on?
I was saying I'm having a lot. I don't know if I'm just having internet problems here or what, but we've had some buffering on the stream, and I'm having a lot of breakup on Skype. Am I coming through okay?
Yes.
Not really.
Not on Skype.
Yeah, I'm on Skype.
Oh, well, I haven't touched anything.
Oh, okay.
It's just weird.
I mean, Jeffrey just logged it a little while ago. That was the only thing that happened.
Yeah, it was right before he logged out.
It drops the voice drops out here.
That's what I'm hearing. Or not hearing. It comes in and goes. It comes on and then goes away. Now it's away. So.
I can hear you perfectly.
I understand you can talk. I understand that really well.
I notice Bob going away. Conversation still goes on. Everybody else can hear me, right?
Yeah, I think my bandwidth is weird here because, like I said, we've had buffering on the stream.
If it's just you, we just lose, some of us keep talking.
Sounds like Friday night, everybody's Netflix tonight must be.
Everybody's followed the little breadcrumb trail with the sign in front of it that says this way to the egress to go and watch the interview.
I can, anybody want to watch it? I got about, a dozen sites you can see it on.
Well,
I had zero interest.
I had a note from Ron and Raleigh today. We've got a challenge here, not a financial one, just a regular one. Ron and Raleigh wrote earlier the interview. I made it to 29 minutes and 13 seconds. See if you can top that.
I made it just past the rocket launch.
So,
doing the network news programs about everybody, Brian Williams and James Franco come on, and I just said, oh, this is going to be corny. And I said, that's it.
Is it funny?
Yeah.
Well, it starts out with the little Korean girl standing in front of a crowd of people yelling all the 70s. I mean, you got to read the.
Okay, well, then it's not worth my time.
The subtitle, but she's doing all this anti-American stuff, and then all of a sudden you see all this smoke and shit come out from how a rocket launch starts and this missile takes off from behind her.
Well, no wonder whoever it was that hacked it. I obviously don't know. But
well, they obviously needed a publicity stunt because the movie's terrible, so they had to do something to draw attention to it.
And this has to be the greatest publicity stunt of the 2K10 decade so far.
And I'm proud to say, for good or ill, that I was pretty early out on the front end saying this felt like the work of a desperate PR flack somewhere in Hollywood.
You're right. Bob is right.
Yes, you were.
Well, that's why I keep it.
You piqued my curiosity when you mentioned it. I actually was kind of having those thoughts, too, and I was like, yeah, it's just too good to be true.
Well, that's why I keep that tattered old wear and care-worn fading purple velvet robe with the fraying moons and stars on it, because, I get it out and prophesy every now and then, get out the magic eight ball that's permanently cracked, and the only thing it ever says is answer hazy, ask again later.
Well, you see all these spy movies or whatever, and wherever there's a hack thing, or they're trying to track a person doing something, and they go, well, going through a tower and such a company and coming back, so couldn't it be possible that somebody hacked into a North Korean computer and then sent
whoever has the magic button for the North Korean node took that sucker down in a hurry, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. I think we did that. I think we did that as a message. Even if it's a publicity stunt and everything else, we would
respond in kind in our time, or our time of our choosing.
That's right.
We went on vacation.
We blocked all 138 North Koreans from getting on the internet.
Yep.
Both of them.
Hey, Rocco, you got a noise going on there.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, I thought Rocco was just providing the rhythm section.
Hey, you're up there near West Point, aren't you, Rocco? in New York. Oh, I must have muted him so, all the way.
A couple of things getting the
gas off of it.
A couple of things come to mind about this whole interview caper. One is it's gotten all the right wing, just this whole Coors beer pent-up desire thing is just, it's ignited all of that. And number two, how much bad beer would it take to have to watch the entire movie?
I'm going to need better dope than I can get here.
Well, I'm not going to waste a Thorazine dart on it or anything. I just refuse to watch it because I feel like I feel like I've let the profiteers win.
Yep.
I refuse to watch it because I have, you know, taste.
Well, okay, there I go trying to get all highfalutin, and Carol just boils it down to, you know, its essence.
Hey, if I want to watch Kayfabe, I can always troll and scour YouTube, look for old video wrestling interviews.
Well, I remember the movie they did to Rogan and what's his name did before, Pineapple Express.
Yeah.
That was a great stoner movie.
Pretty much. I'm sure it made more sense and was actually enjoyable when you were stoned.
I think I was.
Well, there goes another nail into the coffin of Sparky's run for the presidency. I understand you would never run because even if America elected you president, Sparky, you would have to be president from the man cave. We get that.
Yes. Got too much shit to do out there.
Do we all get to
see that you got opinions to do that work?
Sparky, if you become president, please tell me it's mandatory weed for everyone.
Oh, yes, of course.
Got my vote.
20 rule.
I mean, when you got osteoarthritis in your knees and your back, I mean, there's nothing better.
I'd settle for it just for fun.
Yeah, that'd be nice, wouldn't it? Oh, well, we can do the alternative. We can go get shit-faced drunk and beat our wives.
That's just
awesome.
And you know what? They'd send you your Republican registration probably the next day.
Oh, yeah. It'd fit right in.
That or your membership in the NFLPA. I'm not sure which. Oh, I'm ashamed of myself.
In my state, if you've been convicted of domestic abuse, won't stop you from getting a gun. They think it's a grand idea.
You know, Bob, I don't know what to say to people like my father who say, look, if the people are in this country are dumb enough to keep on voting for a government that is right-wing and against their best interest, that's his opinion, then they deserve what they get. And then I would like to be able to say to my father, but we have to live here, too. And then he might say, well, you know, we can find a way to separate ourselves and try to create a different world apart from the masses. But you can't do that. We're all part of the same world. So it's really frustrating when I have to hear that. Every election, that's what he says. He says if people are dumb enough to vote for the people that they vote for, then they deserve the government that they get.
Person that went home for Christmas and his parents have dish, so they couldn't have Fox News on. He said it was the most enjoyable Christmas he's ever spent with a trillion years.
I mean, he saw it as entertainment.
No, his parents have it on.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you.
Anything like my parents, where they'd have, anytime the TV was on, it's turned to Fox or Fox Business Channel. Unless it was football Sunday, and my dad would always watch football games.
No wonder you get stoned.
So if it's such horrible programming, folks, then why is it, and we can see it, then how come so many people like to watch it?
Because a lot of people are interested primarily in bias confirmation. It's not, when you say so many people, again, let's understand that SpongeBob beats the pants off of Fox News without even trying.
Yep.
And let's also remember that Fox News is free to all the cable subscribers, cable and satellite subscribers. It's automatically a part of your basic cable package. If you want another point of view, like MSNBC, you have to pay for it.
And you can't even do a parental block on it.
You can on my TV.
Well, couldn't on this, on my dad's. I was wanting to screw with him once, and it wouldn't work.
and you know, alternative television networks like Free Speech Television, which you know I like, and also Link TV, those networks, which are alternative news, they have to pay the cable company in order to get shown on the cable company. It's not the other way around. They're a big network.
Or the cable Murdoch's company not knows
that they can get a big audience, then the cable company will pay for the network to be on.
Well, Larry. You have Dish, it's on the Free Speech TV is on the 4-digit number channels next to the music deals, and older age people won't even go there.
Yeah, well, in my apartment, won't even let me put a dish on the apartment. They're all Comcast. You know, it's Comcast runs the. You know, Comcast is the visual media dictator of the. Anyway, other people were talking, and I didn't get a chance to hear their response. Underneath me, when I was talking, there were other people that were trying to respond. I didn't hear what they were saying.
Just hit your mute button and people will start talking.
Well, I was going to mention about Free Speech TV. It's primarily when I used to have Dish, there would be some left-leaning programs, but I actually seen a couple of libertarian-type documentaries on there also. So it's not, you know, 100% liberal news channel. It's kind of a mishmash of whatever.
Yeah, we used to have a TV in the kitchen. My dad this is a couple of years ago. He come into the kitchen, and I had Free Speech TV on, and I was watching Tom Hartman. And he goes, "Who's this guy?" So I had to explain to him who Tom Hartman was. He didn't stay in the room very long.
You should have told him he was filling in for O'Reilly.
Yeah.
Yeah, but my dad knew I would never watch Fox News.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Is this Dwayne?
No, it's Gerald.
Hey, Gerald, how's it going?
Hey, Gerald.
Oh. Hey, Gerald. You are happy to see me.
We're tickled to see you.
Bob's paying us.
Yeah, in cowbell.
Gerald, that is not a banana in my pocket.
I feel so dirty.
Hey, Bob, we heard about your cowbell and what was in it.
Oh, well, okay.
It's no longer in it.
Yeah, emphasis on the word was.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
Just a lovely thought.
Well, I'm joining the party late. What did I miss?
Never mind, I already know.
Nothing. We waited for you, Gerald. Nobody's been talking because you weren't here.
We've been sitting here in miserable silence.
You got worst thing of radio ever, dead air.
What do you got to bring to the table?
Not much. Not much at all.
No food porn?
No, not today.
I had my usual after Christmas thing. I mean, we didn't do a turkey. I just got some turkey from the excellent turkeys, roast turkeys from the butcher shop, sliced, thick slices, put it in some gravy for last night. And then today I had my traditional turkey omelet.
I browned a pork roast and put it in the crock pot with some homemade peach wine and vegetables and spices and made pulled pork. It was fabulous.
Oh, yummy.
I'll drink to that.
You'll drink to anything.
Hell, I'm drinking right now.
Well, since we're talking about food porn, I'll mention what I did yesterday. I made one of my very rare forays out into a restaurant.
Oh, yay.
With a couple of my friends with disabilities who are political activists from different places. Went to a McCormick Schmidt seafood restaurant and had ahi, ahi tuna. It was raw. Nice. Yeah, right. And had some, and Lottie would appreciate this, had some New England clam chowder, which was really good.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you had octopus.
Nope, had ahi tuna. And then I brought home a dessert, which is, it was a mousse, a berry mousse with berries in a they make a chocolate shell that looks like a bag, and then they stuff the chocolate shell with a mousse that's made with berries and stuff. And I haven't eaten it yet, and I'm probably only going to nibble a little bit of it and give a lot of it to Mercedes if she wants it.
It sounds like a chocolate haggis.
Yeah, but it's sweet. So.
Yeah, right, Larry. Yeah, but not disgusting. Exactly.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So that's what I did in the middle of the day. And then I got home, and nothing else was happening, so I got on Second Life and was there for a Unitarian Universalist service. And that's what I did, basically. That's what I did yesterday. And that was my food porn and my day. So, anyway, time for somebody else.
I learned something last night, or yesterday. You know, I told you about the practical joke we were going to try to play on Doodle. It didn't work. But I did learn something. Cornish game hens smoke really well. Because you don't need to, because among other things, you don't have to use such a goddamn big roach clip. No,
it doesn't take that long.
And you can actually find big enough papers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I just used a grocery bag. No, they were really, really tasty. That worked out very nicely. The oysters, I don't think I've ever made better oysters bienville. And the trick this time through, instead of using shredded Parmesan, I used flaked Parmesan, and it made it much more gooey and stringy, and it was, oh, man. If I could just get oysters in the shell, it would be even awesomer, except there's all of the danger involved with shucking oysters.
That's unlikely in your geographic area.
They had some sitting at Kroger. But they weren't on ice. They were just kind of wrapped up in plastic sitting in the refrigerator section, and I thought they were a little sketchy.
I'd stay there myself, yeah. I think wise decision, Bob.
I can exercise occasional bouts of good judgment. Oh, and by the way, I'm really I was really tickled. Anybody that wants to look on my Facebook page can see a lovely picture of Ferg and his baby sister. We since they were tiny, they were little people when the Disney version of Hercules came out. And, you know, there are two little imps in that cartoon. One of whom is voiced by Bobcat Goldthwait, I think. And
yeah, they grow up fast, don't they?
Well, and the two cartoon imps' names were Pain and Panic. And so what you see in that photograph on my Facebook page is Pain and Panic all grown up. You know what? You guys, they dress up okay, but you know what? They're still Pain and Panic.
They're beautiful kids. I just kept wondering to myself who the father was.
Not the only one.
Yeah.
Now, come on. Actually, Doodle looks a little bit like me.
She does.
And Ferg acts a lot like me.
Well, I put in a request for the cowboy hat, and I got it. And another picture.
And Ferg has inspired a little bit of pushback from Carl, who said, "My God, if you're not going to let your hair grow out when you're young, when are you going to do it? When you're 70? Just say no to buzz cuts." And that's the thing when it. Oh, you know, the original True Grit, Kim Darby, Glenn Campbell. Oh, there's this one scene where they're at the dinner table, and Kim Darby says something to Glenn Campbell along the lines of, "I didn't know that Texas Rangers grew their hair like lettuce." And when Ferg gets frustrated, the reason he keeps his hair short is he gets really frustrated because if it starts getting long, it starts curling. And honest to God, if he ever went without a haircut for about a year, I suspect, being my son, he would look like somebody had put a perm in it. It would just hang in ringlets. Ah, this is frustrating. It looks like I've lost the Skype group. Skype is trying to get your call back. I don't know what's eating up the bandwidth tonight. Maybe Sony's mad at us for figuring out the gag. Who knows? But this has been a lot of fun this evening, and for anyone who cares to join in, the Horn Malloy Skype chat group Friday on the Front Porch Conversation will continue after 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time when we close the stream here and go back to the rerun stream. And again, all weekend long, there will be a continuous stream of various and sundry Christmas Eve programs from years gone by. And again, thanks to Irish Dave and thanks to Rocco for helping out this evening. If anybody would like to jump in and stand shoulder to shoulder with them, you are more than welcome so to do. The PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com. The mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. With the understanding that all checks and money orders have to be made to The Horn or Head On Communications and not Bob Kincaid, because I never even see him. Are we back, guys?
You're back.
Okay, yeah. Hallelujah, glory. No, Devin, it's not all that porn. Don't transpose onto Ferg your own salacious habits, damn it.
I only drink when I'm with this group. Maybe you guys are a bad influence.
Oh well, that means that just means we have to start doing the group more often.
Yeah, I don't drink because I was born drunk.
I'll drink to that.
I don't drink because it was part of the plea deal.
Well, you know, I joke about it a lot, but I don't drink tequila because it makes me break out in felonies.
It makes me forget things, things.
You got your seatbelt on, Larry?
Yeah, well, I'm actually laying down.
Oh, okay.
But the question that I had to ask about Shine, can people get moonshine in the South in bars?
No.
And
no.
Okay.
Well, I mean, you can. There's mass-produced moonshine from you know, honest, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing distilleries, but that's not moonshine. Is Dwayne here?
That's glorified vodka.
Yeah, Gerald. Yeah, yeah. If it didn't come to you in an unlabeled fruit jar, it ain't shine. And you got to be able to take out about a half teaspoon of it, pour it on a level surface, and light it and see what color it burns.
And a quart will probably cost you about $40.
Somebody's right, ripping you off.
And I also asked a question about a still. A still, that's just a short name for a distillery, right?
No, a distillery is a place that has stills in it.
Okay. Well, I hope you folks will excuse me for my absolute ignorance, because I've got a lot of it.
Well, God help. I say this with great love in my heart. I'm afraid if you ever got a belly full of shine, Larry, you'd get up and walk.
Yeah,
because it has transformative powers. But the problem is, when you get up and walk after you got a belly full of shine, you're better off staying seated. You understand?
I got you. In other words, it's nasty stuff.
Oh no, it's wonderful stuff. It will just, I mean,
sneak up on you.
It'll sneak up on you, and it's like a shovel in the back of the head. And when you wake up the next morning, the shovel's still there.
Have you ever had a medical procedure where you were put under and everything's fine, and then just things just go dark? That's kind of what shine does to you.
Yeah, it's kind of like a curtain coming down.
Yeah.
1 minute. Well, Jim Stafford said it best in The Wildwood Flower. One minute you're there. One minute you're okay. The next thing you're just wandering around behind little animals.
Take a trip and never leave the farm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when they gave me my colonoscopy medicine, they said that they're really good drugs, and they gave me the drug, and I went to sleep. And when I woke up, I was fine. But you're telling me that's not the way it is with shine.
No.
Your body doesn't go to sleep. Your brain does, but your body doesn't.
Right. And see while you're the cocktail they use with a colonoscopy, having had five of the damn things, you're out. But meanwhile, the doctor can sit there and you can talk with him. The doctor will talk to you, and you're like, yeah, sure, fine, whatever. Yeah. I didn't know you cared. And then you wake up and you don't remember any of it. The first time I had ever had that stuff used on me, it screwed with my head something fierce. Because I just had this blank space in my life that was like, you know, 8 hours long.
Well, that was probably the alien abduction, the lost time.
Oh, no.
Never mind.
No.
Well, and then he found out he was dating the doctor.
Well, you're paying $10 too much for your shine, Gerald.
Well, you know, it just depends on where you get it and who you get it from. Sometimes it's 30, sometimes it's 40, sometimes it's 20. You just, you know,
what I'm
mark
not,
up. You
what I'm not, what I'm not particularly fond of is the trend of sweetening and flavoring shine and calling it things like apple pie.
Yeah, I'm not into that either. I personally don't drink the stuff because it kind of tastes like kerosene, but, you know, that's just me.
Well, that's the good stuff, Gerald. I mean, don't you remember No Time for Sergeants when they're sitting in the bar and Andy gets the vodka and then he buys a little thing, a lighter fluid from a passing cocktail waitress, and adds it to the vodka for flavor? Make it taste like home?
Oh, God. Well, how do you know when your shine hasn't been stepped on more than it would be stepped on in terms of making the alcohol? How do you know it hasn't been stepped on with stuff that will absolutely kill your ass?
You don't.
The shine will do it anyway.
My only experience with it was from a couple of good old boys from Tennessee that were working on the power plant. And they showed me, this is how you test shine. You look at the flame.
Blue.
If you get a nice blue flame, it's good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, if
you shake it in a jar, and if it holds a bubble for a long time,
It's good shine.
Yeah.
Don't ask me how I know any of this. Well, actually, it's innate to all West Virginians. I mean,
you're born knowing. If you set fire to it and it burns green, it's probably been through the radiator of old Uncle Hillard's 32 Model T. If it burns anything but blue, but I mean it can burn green, red, depending on. Yeah, don't do it. Don't do it.
You really have to trust the guy you get it from, because you don't know how many times it's changed hands.
Yeah.
Well, I've been off hard liquor for years and years and years. Those old boys tried to get me to drink some, and I said, nope, no way.
Well, I mean, some of it really is exquisite insofar as it's reminiscent of some of the country-style stuff that gets done in Europe. Everybody, you know, sooner or later, all liquor is shine at the front end.
Yeah.
On Crete, the island of Crete, they make something called raki. And that's what they do is they distill the skins and the they distill. They ferment it and then distill it. I've had shine made out of raisins, and it's got a funky flavor, but it'll get you where you want to go in a damn hurry, and it'll get out of its own way.
We got to eat it up. Hard liquor was eat the worm night at the rusty nail.
So I keep on asking people this question. I'm going to ask it again. So the people like Tim Leary and Ron Doss, and the guy that invented LSD, did peyote and all of that stuff, they weren't really doing it to whatever expanded consciousness meant. They were doing it for people to expand their consciousness. They were just doing it recreationally just to get high.
And then they wrap it in a nice veneer of we're expanding consciousness. I'm a firm believer in W.C. Fields, and it would not surprise me in the least.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, hey, it's time to wrap up here. Sorry about the crummy connection. Hopefully that will not still obtain on Monday.
Well, thank you for the surprise.
Well, it's been a lot of fun, and I really do appreciate it. So thank you. Thank you, Carols, both Abel and Baker. Thank you, Haley. Thank you, Gerald. Thank you, Rocco, and thanks twice, Rocco. Thank you, Barbie. You have a wonderful weekend. Thank you. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you.
And Sparky as ever, and especially this evening. Thanks for being so quick to the switch. I really appreciate it.
Well, we'll continue on now.
Yeah, we're into after hours now. Except we won't be broadcasting it live because I don't see this internet connection getting any better. You guys have a wonderful evening and a great weekend.
Night, Bob. It's been good talking to you.
It's been a lot of fun, Carol. Thank you. And thanks to all of you for tuning in on the fly or catching the podcast, whatever you do. David noting on Facebook, it's a post-Christmas miracle. Great idea, Ferg, and thanks to your dad. He listens to you, which isn't very common nowadays in either direction. How can you learn from each other if no one's listening to each other? That's two dandies in a row there, David. So away we go. Again, thank you to Irish Dave and to Rocco for helping out this evening. That was huge. And thanks to all of you for the finite, precious time you share in being a part of this long-term conversation and this little family commune congregation. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, moderators in the Horn chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thanks, Carol. You were right there. Man, you were fast. You got there quick. Thank you, John Fox, with a busy day of work ahead of you. Thank you very kindly. It was good to chat with you a little bit. Thank you, Ben Birch. If you're not on the road, I hope you're enjoying whatever it is you're doing. You know, the White Rose Society has been saving. There very well might not be progressive radio if it weren't for the White Rose Society. Ben Birch started it on his own in 2002, and he's never sent a bill in 12 years. Thank you, Ben. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and ACHECT, ACHECT.org. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. This sure was fun. Have a great weekend, everybody.